Word processing is a boon. Most especially the facility to allow you to use bold on occasions in a text. Because it means that when you come to read the text, if the person is diligent in that, you have a sense of where the emphasis is meant to lie. But of course, until we had that facility, texts that we read, all the words are in the same print, you're never quite sure where the emphasis should lie, and you can make things say they were never meant to say just by putting the emphasis differently. So, of course, the most well-known example is one we've used here before, but it's always worth replaying. If you have a headache, take nothing, because nothing acts faster than anodyne. Thank you very much in the choir. The rest of you, keep up. Now, the person who devised that slogan wanted it to be read, if you have a headache, take anodyne, because nothing acts faster than anodyne. But no, take nothing, because nothing acts faster than anodyne. Where you put the emphasis in the phrase can skew the meaning. It creates difficulties for when we read the Bible, because we're never quite sure what the meaning might be. So, one of the verses that we've just heard read in one translation has this: do not be weary in well-doing. Where would you put the emphasis in that phrase? Do not be weary in well-doing. Well, normally the emphasis goes on the weary. Do not be weary in well-doing. But I want to suggest it should sit on that little word, be. Do not be weary in well-doing. Do not be weary in well-doing. And we'll come to why I want to put that emphasis there a little later. From the very outset, doing good works was an essential requirement of living the Christian life. Faith without works is dead, said James. And whilst generations later there were those who wanted to take issue with him, quite possibly because they didn't understand what James meant when he wrote that, but that text hangs over all of us. Faith without works is dead. The doing of good works has always been essential to the Christian life and faith ever since its inception. I remarked earlier about my preaching with a view here. Well, even before that, I'd gone through an ordination service. And during the ordination service, one is asked to affirm certain things. It's a bit like they give you a job description and you have to say yes to it. And when you say yes to it, they let you in. And one of the elements in that job description, if you like, one of my ordination vows, to give it its proper language, was, would I be prepared to undergo the preparation of the people of God for works of service? The preparation of the people of God for works of service. So alongside preaching and teaching and pastoral care and all of that, an essential element of being a minister was to be prepared to do that, to prepare the people of God for works of service, allowing the gifts, talents, and abilities with which we are blessed to flourish. And that work can entail encouragement, getting alongside. It can entail going up to someone and said, you are gifted and talented and have an ability, you need to put it to use. Sometimes it can involve an element of challenge. Sometimes you stumble over the fact that certain people are gifted and talented in particular directions. They've never told you about it, but almost accidentally you discover it. And at that moment you say to them, it's good that you do X, Y, and Z in that direction. Why not think about it within the life of the church? And it can be done. We had a visit when I was a student in college from somebody who came from abroad talking about how their church was growing. And they developed an equation, really. Church growth equals multiplication of ministry. Church growth equals multiplication of ministry. And he illustrated the point by saying that one Sunday a chap turned up to church they'd never seen before, and he came and he attended church and he began to attend week after week. And after a while they got talking and wanted to discover something about him, because they wanted to know what gift, talent, and ability he had that could be used within the life of the church. It turned out he was a car mechanic. And so the church opened a car mechanics business. He used to repair cars in the church car park for church members, thereby undercutting the corrupt practices that were happening in local garages. Now, I'm not saying our local garages are corrupt and certain, you know, horses for courses and all of that. But he was allowed, under the church's guidance and coverage, to run a car mechanics business in the car park. So anyone out there who can mend a car, you're very welcome, because mine needs looking at. No, it doesn't, but that was his opportunity to contribute. All of us can contribute in some way or another. But it's not so much what we do, it's how we do it. The more austere forms of Protestantism understood the Christian life in terms of doing one's duty. And in so doing, they sought to expunge any sense of celebration in the doing of it, even to the extent of their chosen uniform, Bible black, the puritanical extreme. And it wasn't just a Christian life that they affected in that way. It was life in general. They would hang on to texts like one was to work out one's salvation with fear and trembling. It would be a terrible thing to fall into the hands of the living God. The real downside of that approach to life is the attitude it engenders. Now, of course, life can be tough, was tough for very many people then, and continues to be tough for many people today. There's no denying this, and it would be foolish of us to pretend otherwise. Also, it's true, obviously so, that we get tired. There are times when we are weary. There are times when we need to rest, to relax, and to recharge. Jesus saying, "Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest," is a timely reminder to us all. We need to guard ourselves against overworking, because overworking leads to overtiredness, and overtiredness has many direct and indirect consequences. I thought long and hard about saying the next thing, but I'm going to say it, and I hope you understand me in the saying of it. A workaholic is as much a victim as an alcoholic. A workaholic is as much a victim as an alcoholic. And I say that not to trivialize or demean the effects of alcohol dependency, because all of us during our lives have been confronted by that, but rather to illustrate the serious effects of work dependency upon the lives of individuals and upon the lives of those with whom they share life. Some people are workaholics because they have no choice but to be doing 2 and 3 jobs, 12 to 16 hours a day, because the rate of pay is so low that that's the only way they can earn enough money to pay the bills. And that's a stain on our society, if people are having to live that way, because no one should. Back to the advertisers. Remember Mars bars? And what does a Mars a day do? It helps you work rest, and play. 24 hours in a day, 8 hours for working, 8 hours for resting, 8 hours for playing. That's a balanced life. 8 hours for working, 8 hours for resting, 8 hours for playing. You neglect either of those three at your peril. The reading Carol gave us was a warning against idleness. Those who spent too much time resting and playing, they didn't work. In our society today, people don't have the time to rest and play because they have to spend too much time working. But there are those, and the church is to blame for this to a certain extent, there are those who've had inculcated in them an attitude to life is, if you're not working, you're idle. Work, work, work. No. We need to guard against the temptation to act as if we were tired or weary, even when we are full of energy. And that can happen, just because we are having to do that which we wouldn't necessarily choose to do. There is a world of difference between being tired and being tiresome, between being weary and being wearisome. Do not be weary in well-doing. God loves a cheerful giver. Where do you put the emphasis in that phrase? God loves a cheerful giver. No, God loves a cheerful giver. And that extends beyond giving in terms of money. It includes any and every sense of giving something of ourselves, in what we give of ourselves in the service of God, channeled either directly through the church or more indirectly through other charitable activities. Whatever it is, we're to do it cheerfully. And so we come back to yesterday and the church bazaar. And this was written before the bazaar. And I don't have to cross the paragraph out. We had the church bazaar yesterday, at the end of which many folk were tired. Yes, we were. Many were weary. Yes, we were. We went home to a well-earned rest, no doubt. Yes, we did. But during the day itself, the hall was buzzing. It was a happy place to be, due as much to the infectious enthusiasm of those of you who came to help and who did so cheerfully. So thank you, not just for what you did, but for the attitude with which you did it, for the willingness to be cheerful throughout the whole of the day. As a church, during recent years, we've committed ourselves to much well-doing, engaging practically with the local community, with other charities and good causes. We have asked a lot of each other, and will no doubt be asking more of each other as time goes on. When Jesus remarked that the fields are white unto harvest, but that the laborers were few, he may well have had in mind the particular context concerning the need to share the good news as widely as possible. And that need is as vital today as it always has been, and we neglect it at our peril. It is an essential aspect of our work to see to it that the good news is communicated. But what Jesus said might be understood in such a way as to get us to realize that what needs to be done if the world, our society, our community is to flourish as it ought, is that those who would be followers of Christ, who would seek to emulate Christ, even though our numbers are low, relatively speaking, still the onus is with us to achieve as much as we can in this regard. Those who would be followers of Christ, who would seek to emulate Christ, even though our numbers are low, relatively speaking, the onus is with us to achieve as much as we can in this regard. The prophet Isaiah gives us this encouragement. Even the young people will faint and be weary. Young people shall fall exhausted, but they who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. God's promise to us if we commit ourselves to God. It is in that spirit and in the light of all that we've accomplished, even yesterday, that we say to one another, let us not be weary in well-doing.